This is a message from Canal House Cooking. Canal House Cooking presents the first annual Small Holding Festival with the Kitchen Potager at Linden Hill Gardens and Schwartz Brand Studio, honoring the One Block Feast by Margot True and her co-authors from Sunset Magazine. Pull together your locavore spirit, your DIY sensibilities, and a carload of friends and family, and join us for the first annual Small Holding Festival, Saturday, July 9th, 2011, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Linden Hill Gardens in beautiful Bucks County, Pennsylvania. A small holding offers its owners the pleasure of backyard self-sufficiency through the raising of animals and the growing of fruits and vegetables. The Small Holding Festival will be a day of learning devoted to becoming self-sufficient in your own backyard, garden, and kitchen. Visit our website to buy discounted tickets at www.thesmallholdingfestival.com.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah,
that cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite. That cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Man, I wouldn't lie. The cat's high.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. Today in the studio, we have a good buddy of mine, Roman Gee, from Combier Spirits. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Damon. Hello, Damon. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing terrific, thank you.
That's great to hear. So, we met a couple years ago. You tasted me on some spirits, Combier Spirit, the line of Combier Spirits, and there were a few different products, profiles in that line. Can you tell us a little bit about, just to get started, tell us about Combier as a company?
Sure. So, as you know, as I told you, Combier is the first ever triple sec in the world. It's dated 1834. It's from Saumur, Loire Valley, in France, which is around like 200 miles south from Paris. Mm-hmm. It's very famous for, like, as a garden of France. You get like it's very green. It's very boring as well and quiet, but it's great to have this kind of activities, distilling, food, wine, these kind of things. So the Orange Liqueur Combier is the first ever triple sec in the world, 1834. It's basically the ancestor of Cointreau from 40 years. Mm-hmm. So for the story of the product itself, you have to know that Jean-Baptiste Combier, the creator of the company, was a candy maker. Back to this time, he was making chocolates.
Oh, cool!
And, yeah, pretty awesome. And back in the day, it's the orange flavor is kind of rare. It's not like right now. You can get like anything you want.
And many different varietals of oranges.
Absolutely,
as well.
Yeah. Back to this time, it's like candy itself, the fruit. So we know where to get them. It's in a French colony, which is in Haiti. Mm-hmm. We got a maritime road, so you can basically get oranges. So what it decides to do, it decides to create a liqueur out of these oranges, out of the peels from oranges, to infuse its chocolates. So he actually does that, and it happens that
that's how the whole company started, because he wanted to infuse the chocolates.
Absolutely,
with orange liqueur. That's cool.
That's it. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And actually, the liqueur became more popular than the chocolate itself. So he decided to bottle it. 1834, you get the first bottle of triple sec out of the distillery. So. Again, at this time, we don't know cocktails, we don't know mixing. We're way before Prohibition, we're way before like Jerry Thomas or any other of these great guy. This is a digestive. So it's an after dinner drink, it's a before dinner drink, it's a pretty much anything. You cook with it, you drink it neat, so and it's a blast when it comes up in France. It's a blast. Combier is huge, becomes huge in the 18th century, 19th century. Combier is huge. You have to know that now Combier is a very small company.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll come back. I'll come back later on the process. Or
yeah.
And the other product you mentioned, is Royal Combier, which is a much more complex product than the original Combier. It's basically the base is the orange liqueur Combier. Mm-hmm. We add de la Maine cognac, which is a small cognac, very small house in France, and we add an elixir from the 15th century, composed by like. Between 15 and 20 different herbs and spices. It's very close to like a chartreuse elixir.
Right, I was going to say. It's got... The Royal Combier has this like... So like classically like French... You know, like anyone that's ever tasted like Benedictine or chartreuse, you know, it's like... It has that herbal thing to it, you know, that kind of... Almost like a sharp herbal... bitterness to it.
That's, oh, definitely.
Like, that's so like so attractive, you know, and it works so well in cocktails because of it.
No, definitely. The thing is, so in the 15th century, they alcohol and distillation is used for medicine as well. Mm-hmm. So you use it to put in the bed. You use it to put it on your body as a medicine. I don't know if it's really.
People don't really do that too much these days. Well, at least not like.
Could be good, no?
Yeah.
Sure, it could heal some disease. And so we have these recipes. We have this thing. So there is a story saying that Jean-Baptiste Combier was arrested end of 18th century because it was the Second Empire. In France, which is very close to a dictator actually. And he said bad words about the emperor. So he got locked out. And he meets this guy. His name is François Raspail, who is a chemist. He created a lot of medicine stuff. I don't really remember, actually. The only thing I remember is about this elixir he created. He's very famous for that. It's on Wikipedia and stuff. So you can, François Raspail, you can totally make some research. And they decided to make liqueur out of their two products. I don't think Jean-Baptiste Combier ever seen this liqueur because it's dated 1910, the Royal Combier, and he's dead for now.
Right.
So well, his son may have.
That's interesting. You were saying, you know, like, didn't that that what happened to him happened to a lot of spirits producers at the end of the 19th century, right? I mean, like, weren't also the chartreuse monks were in exile. They were exiled at the end of the 19th century. They went to Tarragon, Spain, and then eventually came back. But it was the French, like, dictatorship of, like, they basically wanted to own...
Oh yeah,
everything, right?
It's bad days for France.
For French history.
Yeah, for French history. It's Victor Hugo used to say, "What do you in France?" In French, he used to say, "Le Second Empire," so which means basically the Second Empire, but which means as well, it's a word game, which means the second worst. Because you get the first and the second is worst, so but it's so yeah, it was bad time for intellectual, it was bad time for any for freedom basically. Mm-hmm. So but it's good as well. I think it brings creativity and fight. I don't know,
you have to have something that's bad before you can really appreciate the good, you know.
And maybe it gave or fighting freedom, or fighting spirit in France to like fight for social things and stuff. You know, it's referring for that as well.
Yeah. Well, speaking of enjoying something good, why don't we taste a little bit right now?
Definitely.
You don't have anywhere to be, do you? So this is the original Combier.
Yeah, absolutely.
This one, it's funny because like everyone thinks of, you know, Cointreau as being like the original triple sec, but it's not true. It's this one, and it's mixing with this one since it's so much brighter. It's like more lively and bright than Cointreau is, you know. And so when you mix it into cocktails, it really just makes those flavors, makes the other flavors, anything you're mixing with it, makes them just pop, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, don't get me wrong. Cointreau is a great product. This is a mass production product for now. And it's still a great product for this the amount of volume they do. It's great. The thing is, they've been a category by themselves in the US for like years, decades, mm-hmm. maybe a century almost. So we don't want to be Cointreau. We want to be the bartender house triple sec, the bartender triple sec. This is what we want to be.
Right.
Cointreau is in every bar, behind every bar in the world. We want to be your triple sec guys, and we don't want to be behind the bar. We want to be in the well.
Well, it's really great that obviously it's the timing is right for spirits like this to find their place behind quality bars. You know, like you were just saying, you want to be the bartender's triple sec. You know, and it's true. It's like now we've got so many great bars out there. Existing right now in the last 10 years, but especially the last 5 years, but there's so many popping up every day, and you know, being able to spread the gospel, you know, of smaller brands and better, like more robust history and you know, and well, also robust flavor. It's like the timing's right for that, and people want that, you know, and it's really. It's amazing when you start looking at cocktail recipes with things like vermouth, you know, using different vermouths, even splitting vermouths. Same thing with like, you know, different liqueurs. I mean, depends on the time of year. Like if your lemon juice is going to be, it's going to taste different, you know, depending on where you're getting your lemons from, because obviously you can't like get them from the same place year round. But there's so many variables in cocktails, and it makes so much sense to have things that you can, they have different like liqueurs that you can try and like find out which one is the best, because you know there are a lot of people out there that still think, and unfortunately a lot of bartenders out there that still think that like triple sec is triple sec, you know.
No, yeah, absolutely. It's so as I said, yeah, Cointreau is a great product. Again, I wish it was behind in the well in every bar in the world. First of all, it could make my job easier to put Combier instead. No, but just no joke. It's it would mean we are all like very quality drinkers, and you know, yeah. The triple sec has been bastardized for like years and years. It comes in like maybe what 50% one on two cocktails classic. I would say like not boozy, but I would say one on two classic.
Absolutely,
number one cocktail margarita in the world. Triple sec is in it.
Yeah.
Sidecar, which is a very, very volume cocktail in New York.
Any kind of like Daisy variation. Exactly. Like, you know, it's totally. I mean, and even, you know, with things like you make a stir drink, like a Seelbach, you know, and using Combier, and, you know, it just, yeah, I mean, it's such a, has such a huge presence in classic cocktails, and it's one of those things that unfortunately gets overlooked so much.
Yeah, that's maybe why people said like, okay, we got a volume on this. Some big bars, huge bars, go through like 100 cases of triple sec a month, meaning like 100 liters. So they're basically like split the liquid like on the floor. They wash the floor with it. It's a huge budget.
Yeah.
We all get that. But it's at the same time. So yeah, as you said, it's the trend is coming and stuff. But still, we can see, like, in the city, especially in New York, and in other, like, big cities in the U.S., you still have these bars pouring, like, triple sec. And I'm not talking even about Patron or Luxardo or, like, triple sec, $5 or a liter.
Yeah, yeah.
With just triple sec on the label.
Like, just a white label that says triple sec in black.
Yeah, exactly. And still charging $13 for a cocktail. So, it's, so it's just a...
It's too bad. Well, when we get back from, we're going to take a quick break here. When we get back, we're going to speak more about Combier with our buddy Roman, and let's get into the royal the royal Combier.
Thank you, Damon.
All right, back in a sec. Thank you.
So you think you could tell heaven from hell, blue skies from pain? Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail, a smile from a veil?
This is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to The Main Course Sundays at 12 p.m. with hosts Patrick Martins and Katie Kiefer. They examine issues from the interconnected worlds of agriculture, cuisine, and sustainability. They sit down with key players in the chain, from producer to consumer, farmers, distributors, chefs, activists, and journalists. The Main Course explores every important component of the eating experience: how the farmers raise their product, the distribution channels that move the product, how the chefs prepare it, and how ethics and policy affect everyone involved. Again, that's The Main Course, Sundays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network.
Together about this radio stuff.
All right. We're back. We're hanging out in the studio with Romain Gill. I'm not saying that right, am I?
It's okay. No, it's good. Romain Guille, if you want a French.
Romain Guille from Combier Spirits. And we just were talking before the break about the market of triple sex and the origins of the style, the spirit style, and how Combier is the actual... It's actually the original...
We claim to be, yeah.
Claim to be. Can you... one thing that... I mean, obviously, there are other types of orange liqueurs, which we're going to try right now. Can you tell us the difference between... Just for our listening audience, can you tell them the difference between Curaçao and Triple Sec?
Curaçao, basically, is pretty the same process, but it's the oranges are from Curaçao, mm-hmm. and it's a very small island, and they got limited amount of oranges you can buy. Mm-hmm. It's actually it's sweeter. It's rounder. I would say
it's a little richer, right?
Yeah, exactly. So because of this orange, mm-hmm. Which is we use more like bitter oranges actually for this Combier, so. We claim to be the first triple sec, and Jean-Baptiste Combier claimed to be the one who created the name triple sec.
Really?
Yeah. So back to this time, back in the day, you have no copyright. You have no... I don't think it's even possible to protect triple sec, which is a basic two names in the French language. So triple sec, triple is the same word actually in English, and sec means dry.
Right.
Obviously, it's not a dry product.
That always weirded me out.
Yeah. See, it's a comparison triple with the Curaçao.
Triple dry? What?
Yeah. Makes no sense, right? So the triple comes from the triple distillation mm-hmm. of the orange peels, which is a process, and the dry is a comparison with the Curaçao, which
oh,
is...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I basically like... Curaçao came about out of necessity for having like all these oranges on the island, and they couldn't eat them because they were way too bitter, and they were really heavily on the pith. So they were like, well, what can we do with this? Well,
I heard you get like you had DCs back to this time, and they used to plant these orange trees all the way for the colonies as well. So. And I don't remember. I don't remember the name of the disease. I'm a very bad historian. So, but yeah, I could find the name of this disease, which was treated by with the orange zest.
There was a lot of obviously like malaria was.
Yeah, absolutely. This kind of
one of the diseases that was treated with citrus,
exactly.
Citric acid, and it's so like to me like I'm. Not a lot of people, I don't tell a lot of people this, but it's like, I'm kind of like extremely fascinated with just like citrus in general. Like, it's amazing, like, over the course of time, like, how citrus, like, especially like with like lemons and oranges, how they migrated around the world, and spread out in places where they weren't like native plants. And then people started using them to make different distillates.
Anything, yeah.
Especially like lemons. I mean, like I love the way that And I always like tell people when they order like a Weihenstephaner, like which is the oldest brewery in the world, like it's 1040. It's from 1040. Wow, and lemons didn't come out of like the southern part of India until like the 1200s. So I'm like, don't put a lemon in your freaking Hefeweizen.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It just doesn't make sense. But I mean, it is tasty though.
Yeah, it's 2011. I think we're too used to have anything we want whenever we want.
That's true. Well, so moving on to the next one that you brought, the Royal Cumbier, which we were just talking about before the break. This one is actually the original Cumbier.
Yep.
Mixed with a little bit of cognac.
Yeah, around 18%, I would say.
Okay.
De la Main, which is like one of the finest cognac in France. And the good thing with De la Main, it's actually it's a small house. It's family run still, as Combier. So and since we have been using De la Main for since Royal Cumbier showed up, which is 1910, as I said, and it's great. So it's a good partnership.
It's very warm, you know, very warm.
Yeah,
I mean not like
as no, far no, I got as, you.
Not like proof wise, but just like it's. So I want to be sitting in front of like a fireplace with it.
Oh, definitely. Good cigar.
Yeah, totally.
No, so, yeah.
So, with the Royal Cumbier, I mean, how have you seen that? Like, as far as like, you know, we see Cumbier behind a lot of bars, like notable cocktail bars nowadays. How has the Royal Cumbier been like working out?
So,
because my buddy Thomas Waugh at Death & Company swears by it.
Yeah, I just saw he just got some for his new menu.
Yeah.
I have to stop by and say thank you. That's awesome.
I'm going there later.
If you can say thank you. It's awesome for us. Cumbier Def & Co. for us, it's huge. So basically the orange liqueur, it's a house triple sec. It's maybe the clearest and purest orange liqueur on the market right now, and a very affordable price. So back to business. We have we all have to like look at the liquor costs in any bar in the world.
Yeah.
So it's a big point. So we make this product affordable, and it can go in any, it can be a house triple sec, so any drink using triple sec can use a good triple sec as a good tequila for a margarita or a good cognac for another brandy for a sidecar. This kind of thing. So you will have like a real good drink for a decent price. Royal Cumbier.
You could basically add lemon juice to this and make it a sidecar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, kind of. Yeah, absolutely. You know better than me, though. But, and the Royal Cumbier is more like, it's a creation product. It's for you, bartenders, whoever wants to call them mixologists. It's a creation, so you create around it. We don't come with recipes. I use that. We don't do that.
Like a lot of brands do, they have like a little like hang tag on the bottleneck or like a little book that comes with it. And
so of course you can do a margarita, so it's written on the back of the for the off premise. But I do on premise all day long. So I do bars every day all day long, 10 times a day. I will never say, oh, you can use it as that, you can use it as that. You know better than me. That's true. You just, by tasting it, you know better than me what you can do with it. So it's still a sweetener, but it's, as you said...
Well, plus every bartender has, you know, their own style, and they, you know...
Exactly.
So, yeah, totally. I mean, like, why would you try to force them into making something, you know?
And I don't even know how to make a good cocktail, so I wouldn't, you know?
I don't believe you at all. So... Also, here on the table, we have some dried orange peels. I want to talk about that for a second, which is really a really cool thing here. When a lot of brand reps and brand ambassadors bring around different spirits, they tend to forget, like, this is like what a lot of us want to see. And I wish our customers, like I'm at my bar, I wish our guests listening out there could see these because they're really cool. And like breaking them in half and smelling them, you can kind of get like some of that bitter like aroma to it, you know?
Absolutely.
And,
so yeah, basically, it's orange peels from Haiti. So it's dry for like 7, 8, 8, 8 months. You have to imagine, you guys, it's a small orange, and it's the orange peel, the pith and the zest. We just basically remove the orange itself, the fruit. We dried it on the Asian sun, and we ship it back to France. Back to France, we put it in a neutral alcohol, so it becomes softer. Mm-hmm. And there is something no one does anymore for a triple sec. We remove the pith, the white part.
Oh yeah.
So as soon as it's soft, we can put it in a machine. It's a hand process, so it takes a lot of time, but it's you have to do it, and we just keep the zest, which is a brighter part, as you just did, right. Damon. You crack it open, mm-hmm. and you can smell, even if it's dry. It's been dried. I've been at that for like 2 years maybe, and you still have this right.
It's still there. It's amazing.
You know, your orange oil.
That kind of leads me to believe that like. This being, you know, obviously, like, orange peel has, like, a lot of residual, like, there's natural sugars in it, which makes it, obviously, able to be distilled. Absolutely.
And you get this oil, you know? You know the flamed orange?
Yeah.
Introduced by Del de Groff, I think?
Yeah.
This is the oil, which is, like, very powerful and very bright. And
yeah.
That's why
Combi is brighter. But it's like I just smelled it and I just tasted it,
right?
And it's crazy. It's super dry, so that leads me to believe like maybe there was something to do with this where the word sec found its way into.
Absolutely,
it.
Yeah.
That's just my theory.
I think they did something like that. I have to do some more research.
You know what, man? Nobody wrote anything down back in the day.
No, yeah, exactly. That's the big point.
There was very little documentation. So it's like everyone was too afraid of like people stealing their secrets, so no one wrote anything down. But but yeah, I'm gonna write that down. That's my theory. Well, I don't have to write it down. It's
thank you, Damon.
It's on the air forever.
That's cool.
So let's talk. Really, we have a few minutes left. You guys have been doing something. Kami has been doing something recently with a lot of these bartenders we're talking about. It's called Shaker Faces.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a fun. We just want to have a small fun. I remember we used to watch a video on YouTube or something with bartenders, just like 5 seconds each. It was like a cut video and only bartenders shaking, and we said like, wow, yeah. That's great. I mean, no one gets the same face, no one gets the same attitude, no one.
Yeah,
it's just great.
And everyone has their different style of shake too.
So we decided to actually create like a contest between bartenders with like the shaker faces, because
so he's got the best shake.
Yeah, and the best shake, the best face when they shake.
It's one on one too, right?
What's absolutely?
It's just two. It's each episode. It's two bartenders going at it.
Yeah, it's basically four. It's a round of four bartenders, and every city got like around like two or three rounds, mm-hmm. and after you get semifinal, finals.
Yeah,
sorry. And it's pretty cool. You get different style. You get the very serious people showing you why they shake like that, because their grandfather told them like you have to shake this way or your wrist is gonna be broken or whatever. And you get like Josh Harris, for example, on the West Coast, which is doing something crazy, even crazier each several times he's coming. Last time he was like batching like in a huge
big Parisian shaker.
And he was like shaking it and using like this fishing strainer. So, no, it's you have to go and check it
there
out.
There was one guy that shook three cocktails in his hand and one in his pants.
Joe Brook from LA. He was like figuring out how to shake four cocktails, so three in his hands and the last one in his pants. No, it's funny
it's
stuff.
It's much better than my four cocktail shake.
Yeah,
I actually have one.
You have to. By the way, you have to.
I gotta jump in. Yeah, totally, man. I don't want to give out too much information before.
Yeah.
But I have a very funny way of doing four cocktails.
You're the next on the list.
I actually, well, with his technique, I could actually do five.
Man, we need that. This is the kind of things we need. So. It's not something very seriously. It's to take seriously, I would say.
Yeah.
It's just
no.
We
want to
see your face, guys. We just want to see like every guy who is interested in like this business.
Yeah.
Basically, we have like brand ambassadors. We have like people. They never checked any cocktail, but they're in this industry, like media people, whatever. Yeah. This is the fun part. It's like a database. You can go and see the face of this person. So it's just nothing seriously, actually.
Cool.
Nothing too serious.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's meant to be fun.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Please, yeah, get a couple of drinks before doing it, and this is the point.
We're not a bunch of Bukowskis.
What's that?
We're not a bunch of Charles Bukowskis like hanging out at the bar, wallowing in our sorrow. It's supposed to be fun.
Yeah, definitely. No, exactly. Right. We're in a fun industry. It's just we have to enjoy that. So yeah, it's what I was talking about with my associate Scott. In I said like we have to get these people drunk before they get on the tape. It's something we have to, or it's too serious. We don't want that.
Yeah.
So yeah, shakerfaces.com.
Cool, man. We just have like about another minute left. You were telling me right before we came on the air about a website, another website called Shakestir.
Shakestir, yes. Yeah. So shakeandstir .com in one word. It's basically a social network for bartenders, people from the industry, managers, head bartender, anyone like in the hospitality actually. Mm-hmm. So we can get together on this website. You get news. You get news about a bar in the country, a bartender in particular. You can find a job. You can ask for a bartender because you're looking for a
bartender exchange program kind of stuff.
Absolutely, we're actually working on like a guest bartending program and totally. Stuff. Even if you need a bar back, you all have this problem. Like you need a bar back because your guy is just gotta get into the traffic or whatever, you need this bar back, you go on the website. So we're working on that right now. It's shakestir.com. You can totally go right now online and log in.
Cool.
Create an account.
Roman, thank you so much for being on the show today.
I appreciate it.
And next time, need somebody to get on your shaker faces.
Done.
I'm totally there.
New Orleans.
I'm totally there. I want to thank you again. I want to thank my producer, Jack Inslee. I want to say something serious just for a second. If anyone out there knows of our buddy Ray from DBA and what happened this last weekend, I just want to say please be careful out there, and our thoughts and our prayers are with his family, and we miss you. All right. We'll see you next week on The Speakeasy.
I said Fetch Cat is high. Yes, he's high. Man, he's higher than a guy.
It's with great sadness that we mourn the loss of Ray Dieter, owner of the DBA Bars and co-host of Beer Sessions Radio. Ray made this studio brighter every Tuesday at 5 p.m. with his larger-than-life personality, charm, wit, charisma, and expertise. We hope the archives of Ray on our station will serve as some kind of window into the life of a man who meant so much to those he knew and those he didn't know. And on behalf of everybody here at Heritage Radio Network, we thank you, Ray.
And they've been doing that for many, many years. And how did they get that barrel of beer? Did you ever hear of a place called Beer Mountain?
Where's I have that? Not, actually.
Beer Mountain is a place that I climb every once in a while to find barrels of beer for my customers. I go up there. I wear big, heavy boots. I carry a sled with me because there's snow and ice. And and I go to the top of the mountain, and I bring back barrels and bottles of beer for the people at my bars. And that's where I got it from, Beer Mountain.
You're awesome, Ray.
It's better for growing things. There's just more rain and more regular temperatures, not as harsh a winter.
Sure.
So it just became more economically viable to grow it there.
Can I just make a statement? I want to apologize to everybody that asked me why hops weren't grown in New York State, because I've told everybody there was a hop blight. I just pulled that out of my ass.
So why did you open a bar in New Orleans?
Well, everybody asks that question. The basic reason I opened a bar in New Orleans, down there, obviously it's a drinking town. There's a lot of drinking town. It's also a culinary town. They have some of the best restaurants in the country down there, and people told us we were crazy bringing a good beer, good whiskey, good drinking concept down to New Orleans, because all the people wanted was, you know, huge-ass buds. And that's all well and fine, and there's a lot of fun to be had on Bourbon Street, but there's a lot of shit going on down there away from Bourbon Street. And we opened up DBA in 2000, and we had a slow beginning because we had a pretty good list, and people were like kind of intimidated. But once the restaurant people, the chefs, the service people in the restaurant industry kind of got wind that we were down there and we had a great beer selection, we we got filled up pretty fast. I mean, it worked out real well. And we opened our second place called Mimi's down there. And another aspect about it is down there, you know, a bar owner is a respected member of the community. We pay our taxes, we employ people, and we're part of the whole trade industry down there, the whole tourist industry. In New York City, we're not treated quite the same, and you know that as well as I speak. We're kind of treated as we're not a respected member of the business community as bar owners, necessarily.
So you like New Orleans?
I love it.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. Ray Dieter, a.k.a. Bootsy Collins, was just on the air. Ray, what was it like in the old days? Did you have a band or something? Bootsy Collins, Ray Dieter, DBA.
I play guitar a little bit, but yeah, it was kind of boring. The beer business is a lot more fun, Jimmy.
You're just too cool, man. I love you, man. Ray, tell us the Tom Peters story. I know you've known him for years.
You know, I have known him for years, and all the stories that I have about Tom, I cannot tell you on the radio.
How about a general beer theme story, like
okay,
the first time you met him? How about that?
Okay, the first time I met Tom, he was running a bar in Philadelphia called
Copa 2,
right. And he was, I went down there, DBA was a brand new bar. We went down there, and he was one of the most generous, wonderful guys. He's like, oh, DBA, I love you guys. Like, how did he hear about us? I have no idea. But he knew who we were, and he treated us like kings. And free food, free drinks. So generous. And then I found out that he didn't own the place. So it's like, oh, that makes a lot of sense now.
If anyone's offering a course like that, it's a scam.
It's absolutely. I took a course at NYU about opening a bar, and it was just a fallacy. It was just ridiculous. They have no idea. It's all about math, too. And the math they talk about is really fun, but it's really not pertinent to what you do on a day-to-day living. Yeah, we need beer. Can somebody open some beer?
All right, I'm all over this. Give me a minute. Give me a bottle.
My glass is empty.
This is the first show. We haven't been drinking beer nonstop.
Right. Hey, Ray, how are you? How was your weekend?
You know, my New Year's was fine. I made a few bad choices, but you're supposed to. That's just what it is. New Year's is about making bad decisions. And I did that. But it, all in all, okay. I lived through
it. Like I say, we're the only brewery in the world. We have wooden oak casks. So
yeah. When are we going to get some casks?
That's the reason. I mean, these casks, we sell them in England. You can't ship these things across the Atlantic Ocean.
How about if we provide the casks?
Even if we do provide the
casks.
When
I say we, I mean by America.
Well,
and by America, I mean Union. Union beer.
Cask beer, done the traditional way, as we do it, has a shelf life of probably about a week after it... after it's brewed.
Yeah, but we have some casks coming over here. I know the Shelton Brothers bring some casks in. I know that the United, another importer, brings some casks.
I mean, that's fantastic.
And they're fine.
I'm really glad that you appreciate, you know, that's great for you that you
have pressure.
English cask beer. But, I mean, to be brutally honest, the way that we do things at Sam Smith's is that we are very, very traditional, and that's what we believe our success is based on, is sticking to what
best. But IPA was made to be sent to India, and that's before airplanes and big steamships. I mean, if you really want to be traditional, you can, like, you know, we can get a donkey cart to come around south of Africa or whatever on a tramp steamer and bring it over. But I think it's time for Samuel Smith's to be available in cask occasionally for special events in New York. A lot of the beers in England, I mean, most of the breweries, the old school English ale breweries, would make a barley wine, but it wasn't, they weren't proud of them. It was something that they kept under the shelf, and it was something that, like, the old guy with the really greasy red woolly cap in the corner would get a little glass, and it was like, he would get a little bottle of it, it was about 6 ounces, and he'd pour it into his ale.
Yeah.
Because nobody would sit there and pound barley wine like we do here in America.
Right. Yeah.
And that barley wine that he was pouring into
his
ale.
It was fortification,
right. His ale was about 3.5%. It was a session beer. And the barley wine back in the day was probably about 6%, 6.5%.
Right.
And he didn't want to be seen drinking that because only old drunks drank barley wine. But that's a whole old profile.
Little nip.
Yeah. And now, so he would do, he would dip that little glass into his ale, and he would drink that. He'd sip that and quietly have a nice day.
Can't wait to be old.